Hello there, this is Bane. When I'm not out on the streets of Gotham hunting the Batman, I find myself listening to Part-Time Fanboy on a regular basis. Be sure to check out Part-Time Fanboy at www.parttimefanboy.com for somewhat weekly podcasts and reviews about various fanboy-related subjects. Also be sure to like them on Facebook and follow them on the Twitter. Do it now, or I'll have to do something awful to your spine.
Part-Time Fanboy.
Part-Time Fanboy doing my thing.
More powerful than a locomotive.
Fanboy.com.
Well, let's start the podcast, shall we?
Yeah, let's do it.
Let's begin it. All right, this is the one and only Part-Time Fanboy podcast. My name is Christian Horn. I am on the line with my good comrade, compatriot, compadre, Clay Adams, a Kickstarter aficionado, I should say, a master at the Kickstarter craft. The man who makes Kickstarters happen. I am very excited to talk to you as always, because it's always a great chat. But why don't you tell the people why we are chatting? Because I was not able to move the recording into the garage because it is 100 degrees. And the title of your book, it's like 100 degrees in the valley right now. And the garage does not have air conditioning. So I was like, doing that. So, but the title of your book is might be a little controversial for 12-year-old hearing. So if you want to say the title of your book and I shall just follow your lead, go right ahead.
Okay, here we go. I'm going to shorten it.
Oh, you are. Are you going to use the acronym?
I'll use the acronym, although I'll still say the word though in the subtitle, because it's we're billing it as PBOW.
Okay.
World War Bitch.
Gotcha.
Number one is launching on Kickstarter this week.
Yeah. Well, it's funny because I always think that this room is a bit isolated from the rest of the house in my imagination, but my family's like, we can hear everything you're saying. And I'm like, I think my daughter actually heard one of her parents curse first because it was me talking on the podcast. She's like, I heard you say the F word. So in any case, yeah, I'm a bad parent. That's all it is. But so PBOW. I shall say. Is this the third series in the or is it the second?
It's only the second. Yeah, feels like the third because we did the first one. We did the first one so long ago. We started it in 2013 and probably finished it up in like early 2014.
Yeah.
But the acronym for anyone who's wondering, shall I say it?
I can say it on the podcast. Nobody can hear outside. I have headphones on. There is no.
Okay.
No. Yeah.
So Pregnant Bitches of War was our first volume.
The family friendly title.
It's very family friendly. It's just a gas.
The title that every executive is banging down the door. I gave you a hard time about it when you were on the podcast.
You did.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a terribly uncommercial title, but you know, I think we just. We've tried to think of other titles for it, and there's just no other title that does the book justice. And I think we just have to accept that this is like indie gonzo comics, man.
Sure.
It's going to be out there.
Yeah. I mean, one of the things that I love about you and I love about your strategy, I mean, we were talking a little bit before I actually said, let's start this podcast, you know, before we went on air. I used air quotes. Nobody can see that but you because we're doing video. We're doing fancy video. The people can't see the video. We could just see each other.
But they feel it.
They can feel the air quotes. The thing that I'm so very... You had said that you are going to Comic-Con. Like, you're going to Comic-Con this year. And as we're recording, it's like the weekend before Comic-Con and everyone's gearing up. I'm not going because Comic-Con is just too much for me. I can't handle it. It's just, it's gotten out of control and crazy. And I don't really have anything to like really promote like big. So I feel kind of like useless walking around Comic-Con. I mean, I have this podcast and stuff, but it is called Part-Time Fanboy for a reason. I'm not ambitious, people. There's no ambition behind it. But like we've talked in the past and you're not really like going to like lots of conventions to promote like your stuff. And that is like one of the more, the thing that I'm always like Clay is awesome because the thing that you're always, that you always hear from everyone is like, you got to go to the cons, you got to get a table, you got to, and I always feel weird as a human being on my end, because for me, it's like, that's not necessarily like a lifestyle that I can necessarily embrace, you know, having a family and stuff like that and paying $300 for a table at every, and traveling like every other weekend or whatever. Like it works great for a lot of professionals. But one of the things that sort of gave me hope, you know, about like my own little strip and the things that I'm doing is that you're able to get your book successfully funded on Kickstarter and get them out there to people without necessarily having to do the con schlep that you're about to engage in.
Yeah, well, I should clarify. When I say that I'm getting ready for Comic-Con, I mean that I'm going to be wandering the halls,
sure,
being pushed along by the hordes, yeah, and wondering why more people don't use deodorant. I'm not tabling. So I go there and I go so I can like get some face time with some people in the industry, you know, sure, maybe like see some people I haven't seen, but I'm not really selling any wares other than maybe handing out postcards for the Kickstarter.
Sure.
I did Heroes Con last year and I tabled.
Oh, okay.
And I'm tabling again at Wizard World Tulsa.
Oh,
which,
wow,
is coming up in September. I'll be with D.E. Schrader once again.
Is he flying out for that?
He's flying out.
Oh, man. That's amazing.
We're gonna tag team again. So Baby Badass and Pregnant Bitches of War. They make a good team.
They
They're
make
like
a good
couple. Chocolate and peanut butter.
Yeah, exactly. So Tulsa, Oklahoma, right?
That's right. Yeah. Oh, nice. Totally.
That's so great. Is that like a big convention?
I have no idea.
you've never been there before?
No. I just moved.
Do you have like roofs there?
Not at all. In fact, Dave is the one who invited me. He texted me a few weekends ago.
Oh, wow.
And was like, hey, do you want a table with me at Wizard World Tulsa? And I'm like, yeah, sure. Because that's a 2-hour drive from where I am. We just moved from Atlanta.
Yeah.
And I kept telling myself like, oh, well, I'm excited because we're going to be, we're in the northwest corner of Arkansas. And so, we're like within a day's drive of like Chicago, Denver, Dallas, all these major cities. So I was like, oh, well, I could maybe potentially attend some more cons if I wanted to.
Sure.
But I'm with you. Like the having a family and making comics and, you know, it's very difficult to get out to all these cons. And I know people who do con after con after con after con. And I just don't see how they do it. I haven't figured out how to make it work, and I'm sure it would be great if I could get out there because I love meeting people and I love talking to people and selling the book face to face. That's great. I have to, because I have the family and other obligations, I have to sort of prioritize like, and this is going to sound crass and I don't mean it to be, but I have to prioritize profit. Like it doesn't matter to me. Like I sometimes hear comics creators talking about their business and they're going on and on and on about their revenue, but they're never talking about their expenses, you know?
Sure.
And when they do, you sort of start to realize like, well, they're not, like they're making $2, you know what I mean?
Sure,
like it's great that they're getting out there, but they're paying for a hotel and you know, the table and all of this stuff. And
it's a lot. And it adds up.
It really does. It really does. And I mean, your expenses can just get out of control. And I've heard, like, I've heard other creators talk about the fact that they're, you know, they're stressed. They're like, I want to make this much money, but in order to do that, I've got to make I've got to spend this much money. And I'm kind of like, well, I don't care about making all that much money as long as I can get the book out there, get it in people's hands, get them reading it, and make enough to just like pay for the art and pay for the printing and pay for the shipping. And so that's why I've stuck with Kickstarter. And so far it's been good to me.
Yeah, I know. I mean, you've been successful and you helped, like, and when we talk about Dave, I should say it's anybody who's not listened to this podcast before or does not know who either of us are. We're talking about my friend David Schrader, who I worked on a book called Baby Badass with through Action Lab Comics. And you were kind enough to set up like Dave's Kickstarter, which, you know, did get funded and all that stuff. So you, when I was saying, like, you know, the master of Kickstarter, like, that's no joke. Like, you know what you're doing. And did anybody ever contact you, like, after that? Like, to say, like, can you help me run my Kickstarter? Because that seems like something that you should be doing, like, marketing your services out and being like, I can get your Kickstarter up and running.
Yeah, I've talked to a few people. Nothing solid yet, but I've had some discussions for sure.
No, that's good. Like, so go back in the time machine a little bit, and I'm sure we've talked about this on like one of our past interviews before, but you know, whatever, it's been a while. And and first of all, I should say because when you contacted me, you were like, oh, like, is it okay to do like a threefer? Listen, I love having people back on. I love like honestly, when an interview goes really well with people, and it has, like on this podcast, like several times, I feel like a camaraderie, like with the person that I've talked to. And, you know, I'll friend them on Facebook and I'll see like what's going on with them. So there is like a bit of a, like, this person's my friend now, which is okay. Not, you know, necessarily particularly authentic, you know what I mean? But I feel like when it goes well and, you know, we chat. So don't ever feel like, and this isn't only for you, for anybody that's ever been on this podcast, please contact me. I love it. I love, you know, reconnecting with people and talking with people, because as we've said, we're both family people, and I can barely call my mom sometimes. You know what I mean? Like, right. You know, so calling like friends and having an excuse. But in any case, what I was going to say before is go back to like your first like Kickstarter, if you can. What was it for? Was it for PBOW?
Stupidly, no. Like,
was it Red Xmas or?
Yeah, it was. It was. Okay. So we started doing PBOW, like I said, back in 2013, 2014, and we released them through our website as like PDFs for like $1. And we thought, oh my God, we're going to get rich. This is going to be amazing.
Yeah.
That somewhat predictably, I guess, if you're smarter than we were, that didn't happen. Uh-huh. But when it was time to come to Kickstarter, we had this weird feeling, and it's this thing that creators do where like you get locked into this idea of what you quote unquote should be doing.
Yeah.
So I'm doing the air quotes now.
Yeah, you're doing air quotes. It's air quote-o-rama.
It's air quote-o-rama here. Nonstop air quotes.
Yeah.
But we decided when we launched, we had this idea like, oh no, we're going to be like a publishing company. Like, we're going to have all this IP and like, so we announced, like, we did Pregnant Bitches of War. We did a book called Dead Skins. And then we announced, Red Christmas. And so we hadn't started making that book yet. After we wrapped up Dead Skins and the first volume of PBOW, we were like, okay, now we've got to get back on Red Christmas. Like, we've got to produce this. We're out of money. So what are we going to do? We're going to do a Kickstarter.
Okay.
That's going to make us rich.
Right? Yeah.
And what we should have done was kickstart PBOW, because we had built up a fan base. Oh. Everything was paid for, and we had never produced a print copy of it. So okay. It would have been super easy at that point to go to Kickstarter and tell all the people that had already been reading the book, hey, come get a print copy.
Yeah.
And like, it may have been an easier road if we had done that. But instead, we were like, nope, we're going to do a totally brand new series that nobody's heard of, nobody cares about. Uh-huh. With no buildup,
Yeah.
And we had a relatively low goal. I can't remember. It was maybe like 3,000 or something like that. And it was a struggle. And I like about halfway through it, I just kind of Googled like, how do I run a Kickstarter for my comic book?
Yeah.
and I got all these posts, written by a guy named Tyler James. And if you're unfamiliar, Tyler runs now a podcast called Comics Launch. Mm. And he didn't at that time. He just had a blog, but he had all these amazing blog posts. And I was like reading it going, okay, this guy knows what they're talking about. Like, he clearly has done this before. He's put a lot of thought into here's what worked, here's what didn't. And honestly, like, I literally just followed his blueprint that he laid out in his blogs. And we funded,
yeah.
And it was, you know, it funded late, you know, it funded kind of at the very end. Uh-huh. And it was, I would say, predominantly, friends and family,
uh-huh,
at that point with that first campaign. But a couple of years later, I saw that Tyler was starting some courses. So I took a course, like, I was in the pilot version of his course on starting your mailing list.
Was
and
it
that's
like an
kinda
online course or something?
Totally oh, okay. Online. And gotcha. Because it was the pilot version, it was dirt cheap. Like, it was just a no-brainer. Like, yes, I will pay, you know, $40 or whatever it is to get this big course.
Yeah.
On how to write a newsletter and build an audience. And so once again, like, I just followed his step-by-step blueprint that he laid out and built up this mailing list that has just kind of been growing and growing and growing. And now I have an audience that is like ready to buy when I say, okay, the Kickstarter's live.
Yeah.
And it's less and less friends and family, you know, like it's uh-huh. It's inverted, whatever the ratio, right?
So oh,
it's,
that's great.
It's a small amount of friends and family. And now it's just mostly people I don't know, which is fantastic.
Oh,
which is what you want.
That's great. That's great. So I'm going to have to, I don't know that I don't see a like Dave was like, hey, you know, I have a dinky web comic that comes, a page comes out every 3 months or whatever, but he's like, you should run a Kickstarter for that. And I'm like, why? There's like no reason. I mean, there literally is no reason, but I feel like, it's very impressive that, you know, particularly with something with a title like that, like that you're able to sort of like get past that and find, you know, that you're able to, you know, sort of get past like any hurdles and just be able to, you know, continue to fund your Kickstarters and that you've been able to publicize your books and, you know, make them come out. And I'm assuming, you know, not necessarily make money, but break even, right?
Yeah, totally. So the way I look at it is like I want to make enough profit on one book that I can then roll that over to the next book.
Sure.
So like it may not pay for the next book entirely, but it can at least get me started on the art so that I can then produce a preview that I can then show to people as like proof of concept. And then be like, hey, fund this next issue because I've got these five pages done and this is what it's going to look like.
Sure,
and, you know,
sure.
And you get a cover and things like that. So, yeah, I mean, you know, I'm not going to pretend like I'm rolling in dough. I'm still not rich yet off
sure.
of this indie comics thing. But
well, I don't know a lot of people who are in comics, so, you know.
Yeah, I think in indie comics, you just sort of, or probably even mainstream comics, to be honest, like you just sort of resign yourself to the fact that it's a particular ghetto and, you know, you're not going to be rolling in dough unless, you know, your thing becomes the next Game of Thrones.
Yeah.
Which, you know, that very, very few do. But I like to say I do this. I make comics out of just sick compulsion. Like I can't stop making comics.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so as long as I'm going to be doing that, I want to keep connecting with people. I want to keep making the books. I want to keep hopefully having them pay for themselves. And hopefully somewhere down the line, you know, I'll be able to just put some in my pocket, but
yeah.
We're getting there. Slow and steady wins the race.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, why don't you, so the Kickstarter as of the time that we're recording, is not up yet, but it's going to launch. What's the date?
So right now I'm looking at July 16th. That's So that's the date I've announced. I'm sort of biting my nails waiting for Kickstarter to approve my project.
It takes
like up to 3 days. And I've never had it take more than like 2 seconds, but I'm hearing from a lot of people that it's taking longer and longer. And
why is that?
I don't know. I don't know if more people are launching projects or if they've changed whatever their algorithm is for checking it out. I don't know. But anyway, they're like, you'll hear back from us before July 16th or by July 16th. And I'm like, well, that's when I'm launching. So
that is like right before San Diego. I mean, do you think that would hurt or hamper you at all? Like right during the NerdCon when everyone's like not paying attention to like anything?
Yeah, I don't know. And like my original instinct was to wait until I got back from Comic-Con, but I talked to enough people and including the artist for PBOW, Fabio Romacci, who's phenomenal. Uh-huh. And he very strongly was like, nope, do it. Like that way you can talk to people about it at the con. Dave sort of felt the same way. And, I figured, all right, why not? That gives me a deadline. It gives me something to work towards. But I am like, I'm literally launching on Tuesday and then flying out at like 6 a.m. on Wednesday, headed to San Diego.
Wow.
So it's going to be a bit of a whirlwind. But, wow. You know, that's how we roll.
Yeah, that's how you roll. That's amazing. So why don't we talk to people about what PBOW is? Because there may be people who do not know what it is. And there may be people who, you know, when you spelled out the acronym or said it out, might be like, oh, I don't know, harumph, harumph. This seems inappropriate or something. And, you know, so why don't we talk to the people about what PBOW is about?
Well, it is highly inappropriate, Christian. But it's not what you may think. It's not fetish porn or anything like that. do you want the elevator pitch? Do you want like how this thing came
about? We've got
about?
Time. Like, let's start with the elevator pitch and then we could talk about how it came about. Because I'm pretty sure we've probably talked about it on a previous episode, but whatever. Like I said, it's been a while. Comic-Con is coming. People need to know. The people want to know.
Let's refresh. Refresh the memory. So, PBOW, it's about six pregnant women who are plucked from the time stream by mad scientist Nikola Tesla. They go back in time, accidentally kill a young Hitler, and unleash a nightmare future.
Oh, God.
Now, with Tesla acting as Charlie to their angels, they have to escape the exalted father and save the world from a hell of their own creation before their water breaks.
Oh, my God. Genius. That is a genius elevator pitch. That just makes me go, this guy's weird.
Guy is weird.
So what is the sort of interest of as like using pregnant women as action heroes, I must ask? Because I would imagine that it's sort of, or action heroines, I should say. I would imagine that it might hamper their ability to do stuff depending on how far along they are. But how did the sort of like pregnancy aspect develop in your brain? Like,
okay. Yes. So there's a huge answer to this one, and I can give I can give you like all the different aspects of it. So like the purely practical writing aspect of it is that it actually came out of Dead Skins, which is another comic series that we did that was based on a screenplay we had written.
Uh-huh.
And that's sort of it. That's like, we call it the true story of Custer's last stand. Whatever they told you in school is bullshit. And it's basically like it reimagines Custer's last stand as a zombie apocalypse, although we never use the word zombie. But just for the sake of ease of understanding, right, you can we'll say zombie. But there's a subplot in Dead Skins where some redneck soldiers round up all the women because they have to repopulate the earth now, right? Because everybody's getting destroyed in this apocalypse. So at the end of the screenplay, we had all of the pregnant women break out of basically their jail where they've been kept for repopulation. And they raid the armory and they get all the guns and they turn them on their captors. And it was such a satisfying moment. One of us said, and I don't know who, and it, this is it was co-written with Alexander O'Philippe, who I write all of the fried stuff with. One of us said, this should be our next project, Pregnant Bitches of War. And we laughed and laughed and laughed. And then we were like, well, wait a minute. What if we could take such a stupid title and actually make a series that's good? Uh-huh. And then it was like, challenge accepted. Okay, now we're going to do this thing. And I think like at the time, so it was probably like, I don't know, 2008, 2009. So I either had a, you know, 2 to 3 year old and had another baby on the way, or my son was just born and I had these two kids. And so I don't think about theme necessarily when I'm writing, but I find that like all the stuff kind of comes up when you write, like there are similar themes throughout everything. And like everything I was writing in that period had to do with pregnancy or having a baby or something like that. And like, I can't speak for Alexander, but for me, it's like exercising, like this idea of bringing children into a horrific world.
Uh-huh. You're hitting some buttons there, especially the way things are going right now. But anyway,
yes,
go ahead.
So that's the thing, right? So PBOW is literally a series about a bunch of pregnant women trapped in a patriarchy run by a crazy racist dictator. And, you know,
we're too close to home. Anyway, yeah, so, continue.
Some people have found that relevant. It's really just sort of me trying to make sense of parenthood and bringing a kid into this crazy world. And, you know, then like the other answer, then sort of like the feminist answer, if you will, is that like, yes, there was like the joke of like, oh, well, who's the most unlikely action hero? Right. A woman who's 9 months pregnant. Right.
Sure.
Like, yes, there's that. But like the feminist answer is that like, honest to God, I can't imagine anybody stronger than my wife when she was delivering a baby.
Sure.
Like that to me is like the most kick-ass miraculous thing. When my daughter was born, my first child, like, I looked at my wife for like a good 2 months, like, oh my God, you're amazing. Like you did that. And you know, like my wife doesn't necessarily have like a high threshold for pain in general.
Yeah.
So I was like, oh boy, like I'm really nervous for her going into this labor. And then like, she was just a rock star, you know, it was like, boom, done. Like, you know, what's to eat? You know what I mean? Like,
we had different experiences, but go on.
Okay.
Go on.
Well, to me, like, I couldn't handle that amount of pain.
No.
Live, you know?
No. No, I'm happy, you know, as ridiculous and terrible as it sounds, I'm happy to have been born a man. There's no way.
It's so much easier.
Yeah.
And so, you know, and anyway, so that's like, I guess that's the, you know, that's the other, the non-jokey answer is that I just felt like, wow, she was such a badass that I could see it. I could see the badass pregnant action hero. And now we have six of them.
Sure. So, I mean, does this, obviously pregnancy leads to birth at some point. So you've got your protagonist and it's a big part of the title of the book. Are there any plans for any of them to, you know, complete the cycle in this series? Like, are we moving towards, and then will you bring in other, you know, PBOWs or like, there's always people, it's like zombies. There's always people being killed. There's always people about to be born, like that sort of thing.
Totally. So we do have a future story arc entitled A Birth in the Family.
Oh.
So that's
is that like a take on the Batman Death in the Family?
Of course.
See? Yes. We're nerds here. We know what's up.
we are indeed.
That's great.
There will be no crowbars in that series. Maybe there will. I don't know. They might have
Do you remember, just like to go off on a tangent for a side, do you remember reading that for the first time when you were a kid, like a teenager?
Oh, totally.
And I was like, what? This, and it was like, it came out like on newsstands. Like, and I remember reading it and being like, what the hell is happening? Like, this is crazy. Like, this is ridiculous. You know, I mean, it was more intense than maybe anything like even in The Dark Knight Returns. Like, I was like, this is really graphic.
It's insanely graphic.
Yeah.
And like, that, did you vote? Did you call the 800 number?
I may have voted, and I probably may have voted to kill him. Like,
oh, I think I voted to kill him.
Yeah. I think a lot of people that I knew voted to kill him. Just because at that time, like, the concept of Robin, like, just seemed lame. But now as growing up, or like through the years, I've always been like, oh, I feel bad that I did that. Because I actually think Robin is a great idea now. But
oh, totally.
As a teenager, I was like, Robin sucks. Probably because you were trying to pull so much away from like the Adam West thing, you know what
right.
I mean?
Right. Yeah. And so I was young enough when that came out that like I was naive enough to think that I would actually call the number and there would be another person on the other end of the line, like wanting to chat with me about my thoughts about Robin and so why Robin should die.
I was going to call
to vote that Robin dies, but only if they brought back Dick Grayson as Robin.
Oh,
that was the only reason why I wanted them to kill Robin. And when I got that automated message that was like, thank you, your vote has been recorded, I was like, wait, no, that's not what I wanted.
I know, right? Yeah, no, I mean, it's funny because that's interesting. I didn't care about Dick Grayson. I didn't care about any of that stuff. Just the concept of Robin. Like, I was like, that's lame. Robin's dumb with the booties and stuff. And then when they did kill him off and they brought back, like, what was it? Was it Tim Drake at that point?
Yeah,
like,
Tim Drake took over
and they changed his costume. I was like, oh, he's kind of badass looking now. Like, so
he's got long pants.
Yeah, he's got long pants. Exactly. So anyway, that was like a little tangent. But we mentioned that and I was like, oh, I had to go down that sort of like nostalgic. Because I remember when that particular issue, and it makes like the stuff that, you know, you and Dave and I like are producing look like kind of patty cake now. But like when I was reading it, and I don't think it's even something that I would hand off to my kid, like it was really brutal.
It's brutal. And I have a hard time reading it now. Like, I went back and I read that whole run by Jim Starlin and Jim Aparo, and like, for the most part, the run holds up, but that storyline to me is just so weird. It's so convoluted how they get like Joker's an ambassador.
Yeah, there's like he becomes like, it's not a Saudi ambassador, but it's like some made up country, right?
Yes. Yeah, I think so. Yeah. And it's like, it just goes in weird places. And then just this brutal, brutal murder of a teenage boy that, you know, it's that is just sort of fetishized. It's kind of weird.
I didn't realize that Jim Starlin wrote that. Oh, wow. We're going to have to do like a book club on that, and I'll invite you back to join us. Like,
oh, awesome. I'm in.
We should do that. But anyway, let's get back to PBOW. What were we talking? Oh, you had said A Birth in the Family.
Yeah. And so we do. So we when we kickstarted the trade of volume one, and we did do that a couple of years ago, I finally got my act together and was like, yeah, we should kickstart a print version of this. We did that a few years back, and one of the perks was, we will name a baby after you.
That's awesome.
And that was a high level perk, and we had one person take it. And he wanted to name the baby after his wife. And so Baby Ruth is coming in PBOW, and we have them discussing it. So there's no birth quite yet, but we have them talking about the name. And then Red Christmas sort of takes place in an alternate timeline. And so a couple of the PBOW characters appear there, and they and Baby Ruth does actually appear in Red Christmas. So we've made sure to sneak her in.
So is that just like the longest, like, fulfilled perk like ever? Like, did they wanted to name a baby and then like, what, how, when was the last time, when did you run that Kickstarter?
So that was a couple of years ago, but this is the clever way I did it.
Okay.
So I was able to fulfill the perk because Red Christmas had these PBOW characters in it. I had a page of the Red Christmas issue that had already been produced where they were discussing their baby. And I literally just went in and I re-lettered it and I put the name Ruth in there. So they call the baby Ruth. And I printed that page of Red Christmas in the back of that edition of PBOW.
Oh, okay.
So, and I kind of explained like, hey, here's in an alternate timeline, alternate future, here's what happened. So I was able to say, well, that perk is fulfilled. And then I had them bring baby Ruth back in the next issue of Red Christmas we kickstarted. And I made sure I sent that book to the backer as well. So they I didn't make them buy the book. I was just like, look, you paid for this perk and your character appears again. And, you know, here's a copy of this book. Yeah. And then I have them discussing Ruth in this, you know, like she's picking Bristol, the character who's may or may not be loosely based on. Now I'm blanking on her name. The Palin girl.
Bristol Palin?
Bristol Palin. Yeah.
Yeah. That's her name.
Yeah, that is her name. Okay.
Yeah.
No wonder I'm blanking.
we just blocked that whole family out of your memory if you could. Like, that never happened. Yeah.
We weren't even subtle. We just totally stole the name. I was thinking we did a play on it, but we not at all.
No.
So where was I going with this?
The perk.
Right. Yeah. Bristol Butterfield is her name, and she is in the new issue World War Bitch number one. She's trying out baby names. So if it's a boy, it's going to be Dale Earnhardt Johnson Jr.
Oh no!
And if it's a girl, it's going to be Ruth.
Gotcha.
And anyway, her boyfriend has some things to say about that name.
So let me ask you a question regarding running the Kickstarter again, which is, it just popped into my head. What's more stressful, setting it up and running it, or when it's done and fulfilling like all the rewards and stuff?
Yes.
All of it together.
All
See,
of the above.
You're just making me never want to ever have to do like one. I'm terrified of like all that.
No, it's not bad, and you totally should do one because they get easier over time. It's so the real difficult thing about setting it up is like making all the graphics. I'm a big believer that the more visual you can make the page, the better you can sell the product, right?
Because sure.
Just see what it is that they're getting.
Yeah.
So I spend a lot of time creating a lot of graphics, and it's time consuming. If I were someone who was like super disciplined, I'm sure I could just sit down and like bam, 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 knock it out in a couple of hours.
What do you mean if you're super? You seem like super disciplined. Like I am so like not even close to being as disciplined as like I wanted to draw today and I never got around to it because like groceries and, you know, doing stuff. And I was just
some
like,
jerk wanted to come on the podcast.
No, but I'm just like it's so funny because like I say to my wife like sometimes like, I'm so lazy. And she's like looking at me and she's like, you're not lazy. Like, what are you talking about? But it's like, and you're saying like, you're not disciplined. I'm like, you're so much more disciplined than like, I feel like I am, you know what
well,
I mean? Like, what are you talking about?
So what happens is that I start making these visual mock-ups of the items or like, you know, here's the $20 reward or the $40 reward. And here's everything that you get. And I'm putting them all together. And I start like rethinking my pricing structure. Right. And like, I'm like, oh, this sucks. Like, who's going to pay this for that? You know, like I got to throw something else in.
Sure.
And then it's like, well, if I'm changing that, then I got to go back to this other part of the Kickstarter page and change my wording on this. And let me do that while I'm thinking about it, you know? And it's like, if I were just like, no, damn it. Like these are my prices and this is what I'm doing. And I'm just more decisive ahead of time, then I could probably just bang, 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 knock them out. But it turns into this whole thing where I guess and I second guess and refine. So, but like, honestly, that's the most That's the most difficult part, because a lot of the graphics, some of them I can recycle, some of them, a lot of the wording I can recycle, you know, a lot of the things do double duty. So that's not so bad. It's just more taking the time to set it up. It maybe takes a week to really get the page totally set up. And then, I haven't shot the video yet. I need to work on the video.
Dude, you better start cracking.
Yeah, I'm really pushing the deadline this time. But
do you put them together yourself, or do you have other people shoot them and do the graphics? Or
no, I do it all myself, because I'm just, you know,
You're talented.
Well, I don't know about that, but I have a lot of
skills. I saw you singing guitar in like one of your videos once. You're pretty talented.
I'm a jack of all trades, master.
Yeah, no, because for me, like the thing that I'm always fascinated about, like, so I do contribute to a lot of Kickstarters, or I try to. And this year I actually had like a New Year's resolution, like about comics. I was like, I'm not buying any new comics. I'm going to pull back on like my Kickstarter. I'm spending too much money on comics. They just end up sitting there. I get the Kickstarter. I contribute to a Kickstarter. I never read it. I got to stop. And I can't. I cannot. It's an addiction. Yeah. It's like one of the reasons I cannot. Because a lot of these people are either people that I met or I'm friends with or who've been on the podcast. And it's like, again, whenever I have somebody on and it's a good interview, which, you know, I'm not going to toot my own horn, but, you know, I tend to have a good time like chatting with people. It's one of the reasons that I like doing this and I like talking to people. They're nice. Yes, I will. I'm not saying that, but I'm tolerable. But
I am.
But the thing of it is like, I look at Kickstarter sometimes and I'm like, damn, like sometimes people want like $20 for like a single issue, or like it's like $15 for a single issue. And I'm like, oh my God. So I will sometimes default to the digital and just be like, okay, sure. I'm running out of space. I'm going to be honest. Like I got tons of books and like if people have ever been to my home or my office, they come in and they're just like, I mean, you can see a little bit of it on, because we're doing video, but that's not even close to like the crazy nerd junk that is burying
me. Yeah, but, totally.
So for me, like the thing that always stresses me out about thinking about like starting a Kickstarter, and I've read a lot of stories too, like on the media, like how do you factor in shipping? How do you factor in like printing? How do you factor in like, oh, I want to add stickers to this. Oh, I want to add buttons to this. Oh, I want, because I can do, like the thing with me is I'm in graphics. I can draw. I can, like, I don't have to pay somebody to do that. For me, it's about time. You know what I'm saying? And stress and exhaustion and stuff like that. And freaking out about like not losing money or going into more debt or whatever, or debt, you know what I'm saying? So how do you manage that? Because to me, it seems like that's the part that causes me, that makes me go apoplectic when I start thinking about it, where I'm like, no. Will I get the shipping costs right? Will I get, you know, the paying for the envelopes right? Will I, like, doesn't that set you sort of like nuts or like drive
it did,
you?
It did at first, but let me tell you my secret, because now I launch. Yes.
Yeah.
No, I launch a new Kickstarter as soon as I finish fulfilling another one.
Oh,
so what happens is, so like I literally just sent out all the red Christmas packages. So it's, you know, it's Christmas in July.
And
I'm sending out the packages. So I'm literally able to tell, well, this is what one comic costs to ship. This is what two comics cost to ship. Because I literally just did it. So then I bake it into the price. So let's actually talk about that $20 single issue, because I think one of the reasons that happens is that, especially if you're printing low print runs, the per issue costs are really high.
Yeah.
And then you're factoring in shipping, and you're factoring in materials, and it's very easy to get it up to $20. Yeah. What I've started doing is that I've decided I'm not gonna, like, $20 is a lot for like a 22 page comic.
Yeah. Yeah.
But so what I do is that my comics are at least 40 pages. And I've gone from 40, I've tried 48, I did one that was 64 with a spine. And what I've found is that, like, honestly, at least with the printer that I have been using, like, it's I mean, the 64 page one was obviously with the spine was a lot, cost a lot more, but the 48 and the 40 and really like the 22, there wasn't a whole lot of difference in price per, you know, per unit. Huh. So for me, it's like, if I'm going to run a Kickstarter, my bottom line is I'm going to do a 40 page issue. And I'm going to give you a lot of things to read because I want you to feel like, yes, I paid a little bit more to support a creator on Kickstarter, but I really got my money's worth.
Sure.
And so if you think about it, like, I feel like 40 page comics from like DC and Marvel now, like, what is that? Like $9.99? I mean, aren't they?
I don't even know. I saw the other day that there was a new Superman book coming out and it was like $6. And I was like, really?
Yeah. That's,
but I don't know how many pages are in that. I don't know what of it is a reprint. I don't know like what you're getting. Like I just saw like a news story and I happened to click on the cover because I thought the art was really cool. And then I saw the price and I was like, wow, what? Like that's crazy. For something that I assumed was like sort of maybe an oversized like pamphlet. You know, I don't know exactly what it was.
And I think I don't know. I feel like I bought something recently that was like $10 and I mean, maybe, I don't know, maybe that was bigger than 40 pages, but I feel like even Marvel and DC for 40 pages, you're going to pay a lot of money. Yeah. And what we're doing is I factor in at least $4 to $5 of shipping per thing. So the shipping is all free. So like what I'm not going to do, this happens to me all the time where it's like, I go and back a Kickstarter and it's like, okay, get the issue and it's $15. And then you like, okay. And then it's like, okay. And here's another $5 for shipping.
Yeah.
And it's like, look, I'm just going to tell you it's a 40 page book. It's $20, but you get free shipping and I'm going to send you, you know, a bunch of free prints and I'm going to send you some extra stuff that, you know, you wouldn't get otherwise with a DC and Marvel book. And to be honest, like, you know, I'm not backed by Disney or Warner. Sure. So like, I can't afford for this to be a loss leader for my movie IP. So, when you factor that in, like, I don't think it's too terribly outrageous. I am trying to work to get my per unit costs down. So I am looking at some other, you know, now that I've been doing this more and I'm able to talk to more creators and get more in that field, I can sort of explore maybe some different options. So if I can get that price down, I'd love to get the price point down, but I still like giving people a nice thick book. I don't know if you've like read any of like the Walmart 100 page giants that DC
is doing. I won't go into a Walmart.
Okay. Fair enough.
Yes,
fair enough.
I'm a California liberal, people. But I'll go into a Target. I don't understand it. I'm just saying.
Okay. Well, I live in Walmart land in Northwest Arkansas.
Yeah.
And it's the home of the Home Office, and they've actually, I will have to say just a side note, what they have done for this town is pretty amazing. I do wish more people could see sort of that side of Walmart maybe, but I digress. So I do go to Walmart because it's like the only place to shop here. And so DC has these 100 page giants that I think there's like 12 pages of new story and then everything else is a reprint.
I read something like that. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's like they've got a Batman and they got a Superman and a Wonder Woman.
Which to me seemed like a great idea when I read about it and quite honestly got me like excited because they were going to, I mean, like, let's be honest, people go to Walmart, like they're a huge store, you know, it was a great idea for, and I know that there were like a lot of comic fans that were like ticked and stuff like that, but I'm like, we can't just keep the comic shops being the only place that you can get this stuff, you know?
Totally. And it's, and guess the price on these 100 page giants.
I don't know. What is it like? Is it like $6 or $10 or?
$5.
Oh, really?
It's
$5. Know that. That's crazy.
And I come home and I'm like, I've got, you know, like so the Batman one is phenomenal. So it's right now the storyline is Brian Bendis and it's, I think it's Nick Darrington is the artist.
Oh, yeah.
It's the guy that did Doom Patrol.
I just saw that issue in a shop, like the day before yesterday. I just happened to stop in a shop. I was driving past, and I was like, "Oh, let me go get some of my fellow Action Lab, you know, creators books." And right. I saw that, and I wanted to pick it up, but there was a part of me that was like, "Well, it's DC. I'll wait for the trade." You know what I mean? But
and
I love
they're
that
gonna
artist.
Come out and trade.
Yeah,
he's phenomenal, and honestly, the pairing of him and Bendis are it's a great, great pairing.
They really
work well together.
Art is really cartoon, for lack of a better term. And I was wondering how that matched with like Bendis's sort of like serious.
It's great. It's great because it makes it feel less serious and oppressive. You know what I mean? It lifts it in a way like it's. Their styles are so different that it really works.
Yeah.
And so then like there's that, and then they've been reprinting Hush, which, you know, I read when the original issues came out, but I'm totally enjoying it as like just another thing in this thing I paid $5 for, you know?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then I think there's like a Nightwing story and a Batgirl story, but you know, for $5 on sort of, you know, disposable feeling paper, but everything still looks nice.
That's what I miss. Like, when did comics become like, I think that's part of the problem is when comics became this sort of like I go through my old comics and I'm like, wow, these things are not durable. Like you compare them to like what's going on today. And I feel like there was this thing that happened like in the 80s and 90s where it was like, oh, we need to be like, you know, premium content. And I'm like, no, I have friends that are sort of like from the older generation of creators. And it's like, dude, you read it on the toilet. Like, it's not like, I'm not saying that comics can't be literature, but it's like, it doesn't need to be printed on fancy paper and stuff like that. Like one of the things I'll do at conventions for the Periwinkle Puss, I have like a 4-page book and it's like $1 and it's like a little pamphlet size thing. And people like it's in color and everything. And, you know, I paid $1 to make it. So I'm just trying to like make money back.
Sure.
But people look at it and they're like, oh, wow. And, you know, there's nothing. I mean, it does have glossy pages, but there's nothing fancy about it. There's nothing.
Totally.
It's not like cardstock. And, you know, that's what, in my mind, comics should kind of be, because I see my daughter reading like the Bettys and Veronicas and, you know, they're all newsprint digests and she just throws them in the car. And I'm like,
yeah,
yeah. You know what I mean? There's definitely a part of me that just goes a little bit like,
but no, I'm with you. I don't know when, I mean, I'm sure I could pinpoint the moment, but you know, for the sake of conversation, like I don't know when comics became like these well-designed pieces of art that cost a lot of money that you have to go into a specialty shop to buy.
Yeah.
When like they were at their best in a lot of ways when they were just sort of disposable impulse buys.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I really miss that. So I'm loving these 100-page giants, and I really want to do more stuff like that with Fried. I want to get, this is going to sound weird, but I want to get on cheaper paper. I want to make it more of a honest to God floppy.
Yeah.
That is less expensive. But I haven't figured out how to do that.
Well,
for Fried
have you heard of Alterna Comics?
Yes, so I love what they're doing.
Yeah, me too.
Yes, I love that newsprint, and I want to jump on their printing program because they have that where you can piggyback on their print runs.
Yeah, I think that I had seen something about that. And I tend to, it's really bad because I don't get to comic shops enough. You know, I have a couple in the area, but I don't. And I should put them on like a list, but I tend to just buy directly through them and just like mail it to me because, you know, I love your stuff and every couple of months I'll get like a big bulk thing of like their, you know, dollar issues. But the, like for me, like, and I've said it on Facebook every once in a while or whatever, like they're doing God's work as far as I'm concerned. You know what I mean?
Yeah. It's I just love that feel. I think, you know, for me reading is it's also like a tactile experience. You know,
I love the
feel and the smell of the paper. And yeah, there's just something about that newsprint. And, you know, I don't know if it's just like our generation would, you know, does the younger generation, would they have that same feeling? I mean, to them, right, I guess comics are these sort of more like the French, you know, like where, where it's like you get a graphic novel and it's
yeah.
lushly illustrated. And
yeah.
And then now I guess too, like, you know, Raina Telgemeier is that's comics, you know, to a generation of people.
Sure.
So, you know, I go back and forth where I'm like, is it just my generation that would like this or would a younger generation like it as well? But if your daughter's reading Archie Digests, I mean, why not?
Like, you know, I get her trades and stuff like that. And, you know, they get thrown, they get left in the car. And, you know, it's not that she has disrespect for like whatever it is. It's just the way younger kids kind of treat their stuff, you know,
I hear you.
It's just like whatever. Yeah. I'm just gonna leave it in the car, Dad, and just so that you can have it. Like, but what's interesting to me is like I always hear people talking about like tablets and digital and stuff like that. And in my experience, as of yet, you know, not quite a teenager. Mostly, it's like picking up a book like that she loves. So this generational thing, I don't necessarily buy it, but it could be. Just because that's the way that I am and I've passed that behavior down. I don't know. But yeah. But we've talked about a lot of other things and we haven't even broached like what your book. I mean, we talked a little bit about it. We did the elevator pitch. What should, you know, because we're approaching like an hour and right. I know you've got to get ready for shooting your video and running off to the big 50th anniversary of San Diego Comic-Con, which I did not realize it was the 50th anniversary. But
no, I don't think I did either.
Yeah. No, it's the 50th Exciting. Anniversary. Yeah, it is. I'm sure it's going to be a madhouse. But yeah, honestly, it's like Soylent Green sometimes in that place. I'm like, oh my God, I can't move. Like, you know, like the original title, Make Room. Yeah. But what can people expect out of this like new chapter in the PBOW saga? Like for people who are new and people who have also loved your stuff before?
Yeah, so we're making this new arc very new reader friendly.
Good thing.
We're gonna make it super easy for you to catch up and get right into the story. We're also making the digital version of the volume one trade. That's going to be available. It's going to be available digitally, but to anybody that buys a print copy of the new issue, you automatically get the PDF of the volume one trade. If you like that tactile experience of feeling the book in your hand, you can also order a print copy of the trade. So we've got that as a tier. We've got some variant covers and things like that, but it's the madness of the first volume continues. This one I think is in some ways more grounded, but in some ways crazier. Like, you know, I was doing an interview with somebody, you know, typing over the internet, and she was asking me, you know, where did this come from, and I was like, well, it's. You know, it's really the kind of the stuff I was telling you before, right? Like exploring how you bring a kid into this crazy world. And it's, you know, it's really, you know, it's very metaphorical with like the women versus the bad guy who is literally dad, right? He's called the Exalted Father.
Wow.
But then I was like, but it also has dick eating alligators in it. Like it's crazy. So yes, there's going to be a dick eating alligator and he's got his sights set on someone in our cast. I won't tell you who, but there are some male figures in our cast. And anyway,
I'm sure they're no darn good.
Men are no darn good, but yeah, we've got, pirate ships. We've got, a big battle. Oh, and there's actually a crossover with Red Christmas. So you might see Santa Claus and a few Red Christmas characters. So we're just sort of expanding the universe and getting a little nutty.
Yes. And Red Christmas is, as I said before, genius.
Genius.
Love it. That's so wait, is there going to be more Red Christmas coming too? Or?
Yeah, totally. So we've got one more issue in this storyline and then I want to collect that into a trade. And then, I mean, Christmas comes every year. Why not do a new issue every year? So
That's great. I love that book. I loved it. Like that was one of the things where it's like, you know, I donated to the digital and I got the digital and it sat on my phone for a while. And then I was literally like reading it as my car was getting washed on my phone. I was like, I should read this. And I started reading it and I was like, oh my God, why did it take me so long to sit down and read this? I was like, this is fantastic. I love it so much.
Oh, just
like
awesome.
Great. It's just great. It's funny because like there is the sort of like Jersey kid raised in Catholic school, very sort of like repressed.
Sure.
That I have always come across when I like even just sometimes like doing stuff for Baby Badass, I would be like,
right.
I don't know. You know what I mean? But then it's like I'm always surprised by the wit of like, you know, people who have created books like, say, like yours and like Zombie Tramp or even Dave, like Baby yeah. Badass, where I'm just like, OK, like this was fun and, you know, pull the lump of coal out of your butt. You know what I mean? Like, it's just like, get over it.
And that's what it is. I mean, it's a book for people who like Preacher, you know,
sure.
That was a big inspiration. Bride of Chucky was a big,
I've never
movie.
Seen any Chucky movies.
What?
Everyone's like, I can't believe it. I'm a huge horror fan and I've never seen a Chucky. It just always seemed dumb to me. But my friends were telling me last weekend that they were like, no, I think you would really like it. And I'm
yeah,
like,
I think you would. I think you would. And I like all the Chucky movies, but Bride of Chucky is just like, it's where they add some more dark humor, comedic elements to it.
Uh-huh.
And it's, so it's both horror and it's dark comedy. And I think that's sort of what the Fried books are. And so if you like Red Christmas, you would totally like Red PBOW, we lean a little harder into the horror and sci-fi elements in PBOW. So it's a little edgier,
nice.
But
nice.
Still the same sort of vibe.
Are you getting any, because I think I remember last time you had like a Glenn Fabry cover or something like that. Are you getting
yeah.
any of that action going
well,
on? Because are you friends with him or?
No, I totally, you know, what's funny is that Alexander, I think, was trying to get him to do a cover for a while and he was writing him and wasn't getting any response. And Alexander had lined up a few other great artists to do some covers for us. And so I was like, well, you know, I'll try. It couldn't hurt. And I just wrote him a letter and
yeah.
Or an email. And he responded like right away and was like, sure, give me this exorbitant amount of money and I'll draw your cover. And, but I will say for the money that we paid for him, he also gave us a physical painting of
yeah,
that cover.
Yeah, you told me.
Yeah. And so Alexander has the painting, which is awesome. So it was totally
yeah.
worth the money that we paid.
Yeah.
No, we don't have anybody at that level that we're getting a variant cover from. We have so DJ Parnell, who drew our first volume, she contributed a cover. We've got maybe one other cover that's being worked on. I can't quite announce it yet because it might still like may or may not happen. So
sure.
I'm going to keep my mouth shut on that. But yes, so we are working on getting some good variants for you.
Well, that's awesome. So this Kickstarter should be launching this week. If it's the 16th, usually I'll probably drop this episode the Wednesday. So hopefully people can go to Kickstarter. And what would they look up? PBOW or Fried Comics? Or
yes, they can look up Fried Comics, but I can give you the link exactly.
It's, yeah, the URL.
Yeah, it's friedcomics.com/PBOW.
That's awesome. Well, I have to say, it's always a pleasure having you on the podcast. I wish I was going to Comic-Con just to like see you.
Yeah, it would be fun.
It would have been fun. We met, I think, like last year, right?
For like yeah,
a
totally.
Little bit. Yeah, yeah.
I turned around and you were standing there and I was like, oh, hey, it's Christian.
Yeah, I was like, oh my God, the man in person. So yeah, because I don't always get a chance to like meet people in person that I've interviewed, especially since you're like across the country. But
yeah,
it was great meeting you in person. And well, I hope you have a great time at San Diego. I decided not to go this year. Last year, I just went as a lark at the last minute and brought my daughter, and she was overwhelmed. She
oh,
was
I'm
like,
sure.
Yeah, she was like, this was fun, Daddy, but I think I'm still too young for it. Because
yeah,
it was
totally.
Just like, you could not move, but it was a Saturday. So, but anyway, I hope you have fun. Everyone, please, at this point, the Kickstarter should be up by the time this interview goes up. Look up, you know, the URL that Clay announced, or go to Kickstarter, look up P-O-W, P-B-O-W, Pregnant Bitches of War. I will say it out loud and out loud and out proud. And,
World War Bitch, number one.
Fried Cotton. Nice. Awesome. And I have been on the line with Clay Adams, who is always like a great person to chat with. And I will always know him as the master of Kickstarter.
Aw, shucks. You're making me blush. Thanks for having me.
Well deserved. And yes, I love having you on. Once again, this is the Part-Time Fanboy Podcast. My name is Christian Horn. Thank you for listening. You can check us out on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. Our email is ptf@parttimefanboy.com. Please go to Kickstarter and support Clay's project. They are fun comics. I love them all. He has never disappointed me. And if you are at San Diego, try and track him down in the aisles. And yeah, we will be back soon with another episode. Thank you for listening. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Part-time fanboy doing my thing.
I'm not doing part-time. I'm not doing.